Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
This is October 8th, 2020, and this is episode 103 of Transmission.
It is. And it's almost my birthday.
When's your birthday?
Sunday.
Oh, October happy birthday. 11th. Are you doing your book release party on your birthday, or is it the day before?
Well, I'm doing one up here the day before, and then the Minneapolis one's on my birthday.
Wow, that's nice.
Yeah.
So you're gonna like.
I mean, birthdays
are looking to yourself.
Well, yeah, because birthdays at this point are just sort of depressing.
No, like at your age, every birthday is an accomplishment.
Yeah. Every birthday is like another shovel of dirt into the ground of my grave.
Well, you're talking the way I usually talk. That's great. The tables have turned.
Tables have turned. Really, you're being such an optimist, Mark.
Fuck up, Wolfberg. You got a full life ahead of you. So many possibilities.
So many possibilities.
Never mind all this neo-fascist BS.
That's right.
To introduce ourselves, I'm Mark Van Stunick. I'm the director for the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert, the very old director of the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation.
Elder Statesman.
Micah. Okay. Elder Statesman. There we go.
Elder Emeritus.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so back to reality here. So this topic was inspired by, oh, wow, Gus is trademarking all of our comments here.
Oh, this is, good morning. Isn't it great waking up in the greatest country on earth? It smells trademark. Like freedom outside, just FYI. A couple of trademarks in there. Greatest country on earth and freedom. America, United States of America has trademarked freedom.
Or it smells like freedom. Or just America in general has trademarked
freedom? It smells like freedom. Remember how Pat Boone did covers of things? He did a cover of Metallica songs back like 15 years ago. Yeah. I feel like It Smells Like Freedom would be his cover of Smells Like Teen Spirit.
It would be.
Yeah.
Okay, so this episode was inspired, well, by several things, but in particular, the nugget that really got it going was a few weeks ago. There was a Facebook post from a woman up here in the Northwest Minnesota, North Dakota area, and it was, you know, one of these dumpian rants about the pandemic, and it started off with, you know, where does this end, was the thing. And you know, she then went on to say, well, you know, are we going to hide in our houses forever? Are we going to never see our mothers again? Are we going to, you know, are our children going to grow up never having seen anybody's face for their whole life because they're behind a mask? You know, you can imagine. It's on and on and on and on.
Yep.
And what was very clear to me in reading this was she had obviously no idea what was an alternative ending. Like, the only ending was actually not an ending. It was basically the American status quo, right? So she was looking around and looking at how we have totally fucked up dealing with this pandemic. And she was just extrapolating that out into infinity and just thinking, well, is this where it ends, you know? And so that's terrible. So let's just all take off our masks and pretend that COVID doesn't exist, was kind of the essence of her post. And what was very clear to me, and I feel like we've seen this more and more and more, and now it's really accelerating now that, you know, the White House has more cases than multiple countries in the world. What's very clear to me is that Americans can't actually imagine an end where the pandemic is appropriately dealt with. And that was my reply to her on this Facebook. And everybody's like, oh, you know, that's weird. Like, you mean there's a way of dealing with this that actually works. And it very much showed me the, I mean, I want to say it's a form of like brain damage is really what I mean. That's what comes to mind as I think about it, that we have been raised and formed and socialized in this way that has literally like stunted our brains and made us incapable of thinking about anything other than what we immediately see in the United States.
It's interesting if I think about the crises of this generation. So remember when 9/11 happened, there was a lot of swelling of pride, but then the solution was just go back to shopping. So the prescription was go back to normal plus.
Right.
Like laugh in the face of the war kind of thing. In climate change, it's kind of just, we need to ignore it. No matter what they say, it's overblown. It's not a big deal like that. So those two things combined together are kind of how we're responding to this pandemic. And it's this weird mix of science denialism, this idea that the most potent remedy for anything that ails us is for us just to be super American about things, because our optimism, faith, and strength of character alone will cause viruses to shy away and fall away before us. As we step forward, it's like we're Moses entering into the Red Sea with our patriotism, and then the pandemic recedes. Like, that's almost like that. It's how we've been conditioned to think, that it's the way I imagine Trump thinks about everything, that no matter what he does, people have to give way to him. That's how we are conditioned to think of ourselves as a society.
Yeah, and then also the way we're conditioned to then think of others, which of course just reinforces that image that you just gave, is that others they're just not as good. And it's really amazing how this, you know, this infects everyone, right? This isn't just like, you know, the typical quote trailer trash person somewhere in, you know, rural America, right?
Hysteria.
I mean, we were having a conversation a couple of weeks ago with a number of very intelligent healthcare professionals. And I brought up this little story about this friend of mine who's in Estonia right now, who's sort of freaking out because Estonia is back to normal. Like, there's no COVID there. Right, they've dealt with this. Everything's fine. Everybody's out and about doing everything. And it was amazing how quickly these very smart people tried to like pretend that that wasn't true. You know, they immediately were like, well, you know, Estonia does have a few cases. And it's like immediately they were trying to make Estonia crappy. And this is that same thing. Like, immediately there's this knee-jerk reaction to, oh, well, another place isn't really doing a good job.
No, that's like the universal response I've seen is that they all lie, unlike the vast truthiness that we bask ourselves in America.
Yeah. and so what is really, and people have pointed this out in other areas in relation to like the concept of freedom or, you know, healthcare or what we get from society. It's like, we do not even know how shitty we have it. Right? Because we're so much in this bubble where it's almost as if, right, the outside world doesn't exist. And even people who travel, right? Because when Americans travel, they often travel in these weird bubbles and they don't actually interact with other people in other societies. It's quite remarkable, actually.
And it equals having a complex diagnosis of multiple diseases at once.
Right.
Which I know is like in, you know, I mention this all the time, but like, like if you watch medical dramas, there's only ever one cause for things. But in this case, there's at least two. And the part of the problem is like this idea of American exceptionalism, just to kind of stretch it out a little bit so that we're not thinking, oh, stupid Trump supporters. regularly when I'm talking to liberals, if I talk about something bad that we experience in the United States of America, people will often say, that's not the America I'm about. And they'll talk about how what real America is includes everybody. So there's still this appeal to a city on a hill. It's just a different city on a hill. That somehow the solution to anything that ails us is to appeal to the greatest virtues of our society that are pure and untouchable. This magnificent
and better
appeal.
Than yeah, and better than other anybody society. Else. Right?
But the problem isn't that we have a fundamentally flawed self-perception, but that we're looking at the wrong traits on which to make ourselves exceptional. And so, you know, this is why both parties are okay with endless war. You know, it's just what we're fighting for is slightly different, or at least the rationale is slightly different. It's still about money. But this exceptionalist mentality, because I could see people saying, look, our problem is that we haven't invested enough resources into this, and that the problem is we could have solved this on our own if we would have figured it out better. Instead of saying, hey, let's go talk to Estonia. Maybe they've got some wisdom for us. Or let's talk to China, for God's sake.
Yeah. Or again, you know, and so then people are like, well, they're lying. It's like, okay, fine. But let's talk to South Korea. You know, I just posted this today. On a population adjusted basis, if we were dealing with this the way South Korea was dealing with this, we would have had 2,500 deaths. Okay, so that's 80 times less than what we have. And the notion that you can do something 80 times worse and be the best, you know, in the psychology world, that's called having a mental illness. that is a seriously disordered disconnection from reality. Mm-hmm. And yet here, it's called the federal government. Yeah. We got a few comments.
Some comments here. Kathleen writes, we are now experiencing pandemic rage coupled with pandemic fatigue.
Yeah,
I understand the pandemic fatigue. What's pandemic rage? I've heard people mention this. I'm not exactly sure what people are getting at when they say pandemic rage. I mean, I have rage, but
I mean, Kathleen could share more what she means. What I think about when I hear that, which I feel like I'm seeing all the time, right, is, you know, this increasing sort of anger and ramping up of the, you know, pandemic denialism, the pandemic, these people running around, tearing off their masks, breathing in your face kind of thing that, you know, or what's expressed in this Facebook post. Like, I'm so mad because there's no endpoint in sight. And, you know, you're just telling me that life has to be horrible forever. And so, you know, fuck it, I'm just going to go do whatever I want to do, right? That's that pandemic rage. And to me, that arises not just out of the fatigue, but out of this very misplaced sense of hopelessness, you know, that it must be kind of the liberals' fault that we're in this mess, as opposed to the fact that, no, this is our federal government's fault. This is our political apparatus fault. And again, the sad reality that, you know, because we don't look beyond our borders for any other good ideas or any other examples, yeah, we just assume like, well, this is the way it is everywhere, right? Which is completely false.
Comment from Mark. The USA is fundamentally incapable of taking the actions implemented in other countries because those nations have prioritized their citizens over GDP profits. The US system exists to enrich the ruling class, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's certainly what's been going on with this particular ruling class. And I mean, to me, then what's also interesting that we see in terms of this exceptionalism, right, is that you know, when we get going down the wrong road, which we certainly have in this case, there's no possibility of self-correction. I mean, that's what's, you know, that's what kind of defines delusional thinking, again, in the psychological realm. You know, when somebody is in the midst of a psychotic delusion and they start thinking, you know, that God is talking to them, or, you know, there are little ghosts running around or whatever the delusion may be, there's no self-correction within that mental state. And so, you know, you just end up in increasingly a bad place. And I think that's what we're seeing. There's no self-correction here. There's plenty of places we could look to for other examples, but instead the delusion's getting bigger and bigger, right? Like now the entire White House being infected is a gift from God, right? I mean, that's what, you know, Trump said yesterday.
it's definitely entering into like this whole tropish territory. Like, so in my lifetime, the United States was the undisputed leader of the world in terms of power and influence, but that's becoming less and less the case. And so the trope in literature is there's always this, you know, I see it in science fiction literature, of the declined empire, where you have a ruling class, like with their tattered gowns on, still trying to live an extravagant life, acting as though they're just as glorious as ever, or there might be a temporary pause in their glory, and that they just have to kind of stay the course. And so it's this sort of almost senilic understanding of imperialism, of we need to soldier on. And if we can just talk more about our glories, they will come back to us.
Right.
And that, now, and this is, you know, we were talking about this before. There's something about American exceptionalism and evangelicalism are enmeshed within each other, a similar way of thinking about things, to the point where although there's evangelicalism in other countries, I can't imagine how evangelicalism could at all be the same if there were no America. There'd be similar qualities, like it'd be a little more British, maybe a little more of a dry sense of humor. But like this exceptionalist idea that we alone have the special sauce with which to season the world, and if we deprive them of that, it's like it's us not charging a path is somehow would be selfish, because we have such a gift to give the rest of the world. Like that's almost literally how people think about America, because it's literally how people think about their Christianity. Mm-hmm. And it really makes it impossible for any sort of the humility that we need right now. Yeah. Say, look, we need help.
Right.
Like, I don't see anyone up on that stage from either party saying, you know, we really need help.
Right. We need some help.
We need to talk to the UN for some assistance. I love that.
Oh, no.
We need to appeal to the international community to help us because we're in a crisis.
Yeah. Okay. So
this is trauma, and people are dysregulating.
Yeah. 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 No, absolutely. And the dysregulation, you know, becomes more and more dangerous, right? And more and more, lethal to its citizens. And, you know, and then beyond, right? I mean, at this point, and I don't know if we talked about it on here or if I was talking about it to somebody else. At this point, if we didn't have all the nuclear weapons that we have, we'd basically just be like this banana republic failed state right at the moment. And the dysregulation would be disturbing, but, you know, just the same way we feel like when some other country dysregulates and falls apart. But, you know, it's much more dangerous when you have enough firepower to destroy all life on Earth. That's a bit more of an issue then.
It's kind of pandemic rage writ large.
Yeah, exactly.
Serious, right? It's the limited imagination of the USA is really frustrating.
Yes, it is.
So stuck. No wonder our personal relationships and communities are really trash. Ready to just crap fit, ready to accept that being traumatized, unloved, and broken. It's really nuts. It really is. And like, so right now, our society is not only sick, I think it's making us individually sicker all the time. Like the way that our body, you know, I've been talking to a friend about this. I don't understand. I'm not a medical person, but I wonder if all of us not getting, we're distancing from each other. And then so once we start interacting with one another, we're going to have a bunch of other illnesses all pop out at once, because we're basically been taking a vacation from illness. So it's going to get worse that way. Mental health wise, like I watched this with my son. With me, I feel like I'm doing okay because I have perspective. I can understand and think about things. But watching my son and other kids, like, we don't have to be going through this. There's going to be an entire generation of traumatized kids. And we don't even know what this is going to cause. Like, we can kind of compare it to what happened during the wars. And there's all kinds of movies about how fucked up people are because of wars. This is going to be similar to that, but it's a universal experience in a way that war exactly quite wasn't.
Yeah.
Jeremy writes, is there any global superpower that has been a quicker flash in the pan? Pre-World Wars, we didn't have nearly the influence. We have literally climbed and peaked in around 100 years.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point and a good question. I think that part of it just relates to how quickly everything is changing in the world, right? I mean, you could say the same thing about the people who have lived in that 100 years, that they've been through more change than any other set of generations in human history. And so, you know, before now, I mean, things just moved a lot slower, right? And now things, are moving really fast. And so things can grow really fast and die really fast, right? I mean, we see that like with tech companies, right? I mean, does anybody remember? I don't know. I can't even remember them anymore. They're gone so quickly. But MySpace or something, you know.
remember Napster?
Yeah.
I was like, they were on the cutting edge.
Yeah. But it's true. I mean, we have arisen and burnt out unbelievably fast. And part of that has to do with, I mean, this relates to this capitalism thing, right? I mean, capitalism goes to more and more disposable products quicker and quicker because you need to keep selling stuff. And so, you know, why not imagine that a country that is based on that is also going to rise and fall and become disposable very, very quickly?
Well, and it's interesting just to talk about colonialism a little bit. Colonialism, people are going to quibble at this, but I'm going to say it anyways. Colonialism was caused by mercantile capitalism. That's what colonialism was. It was this need for new resources and workers. So we went around the world and colonized places. And when you start talking about post-colonialism, you have the sense, like in African nations, that they were able to push out at varying levels the European powers that controlled them. The most recent example in Africa that many people think about is South Africa. That kind of came later. It took a while before Nelson Mandela became president. But there are a few countries on Earth that are colonial that never became post-colonial, like, because we wiped out our indigenous people. So you talk about some of the crown colonies in the United States. I think that kind of fucks you up. Like, what is it that holds us together as an American people? It's our ideology. Like, you can't really talk about much else. Land. And ideology. And so right now, this is why when we see capitalism falling apart, or at least showing its creakiness and its limits, you see fascism rising. Why it's particularly problematic in the United States, because fascism in the UK is bad, but they have ways of thinking about their history that aren't wrapped up in this colonial experiment. We don't as a society. And so you're going to see this extreme aggression, and we call it, like the Proud Boys call it, Western chauvinism. You can call it American exceptionalism, whatever. People, if this is the thing that holds us together, people are going to be willing to fight and die for this shit in a way that you're not going to see in other places. It's going to get bad. Mm-hmm. And so this pandemic, in a way, is like the small microcosm of what's coming. Why one disease is causing all sorts of culture war, it's because it exposes the flaws of our sense of self. Like, we're not, don't have a sufficient way of understanding ourselves in the world. And this pandemic is exposing it. And so people are willing to do all sorts of stupid shit in order to pretend as though everything is okay. It's, if it weren't so deadly, it'd be funny.
It's
so messed up. Kathleen's got a comment. My understanding from science is that the more complex something is, the less stable it becomes.
Well, yeah, not necessarily. I mean, that is, we have to talk about that in relation to the environment, right? So, so very complex things in an environment that that supports that complex thing existing in equilibrium can actually be extremely stable, right? And and like protein molecules are a great example of that. I mean, they're incredibly complex, made up of thousands of atoms, you know, hundreds of individual molecules of amino acids. And, by themselves, they would not be stable. I mean, they would just sort of fall apart or exist in random long strings of molecules. But they're able to maintain their stability because they're in these water and salt environments that allow them to fold up in certain ways. And then they're actually extremely stable. Right. So the problem that we're seeing, though, is that we have this very complex nation based on, you know, Mark, as you're saying, this ideology and this religious view and this economic capitalist view that inherently is destabilizing to its own context. Right. So you go around, you destroy the environment, you have to look for more and more resources, you destroy people that are in your way. And so the environment around us is becoming more and more destabilized. And so that is going to mean that, right, our complexity is not going to be sustainable. Absolutely. Because, yeah, I mean, we're just constantly causing this chaos, which now literally has infected us. And you see how we've gone berserk. Right? Like, just as a reminder, Taiwan, one of the densest, most densely populated places on Earth, has not had a locally transmitted case of COVID since April.
Jeez. They must be lying.
They must be lying, right?
We have a lot and we're the best. They must be liars. Everyone lies.
That's right. That's,
okay. Ellen has important pushback. Sorry to quibble. It's not a quibble. We didn't wipe out our indigenous people. Indigenous folks are still here. I know you know this, but just to clarify the newest among us. You're right. I was overstating. We nearly wiped out. Mm-hmm. And there are still indigenous people. And this is why it's important just to underscore what you're saying. People say this, but I don't think people mean it. Like, really, if we're going to solve any of our problems, we really need to lean and follow the lead of indigenous leadership on this continent. As part of the, we're going to have to develop something that we know is at the core of the spiritual life, which is humility. Like, really, humility is what's going to save us.
Yes.
Which, and it's the thing that we're most allergic to, societally speaking, which is puts us in a conundrum. And I think it's one of the great, this is why evangelicalism is such a disappointment to me. Spiritual humility is one of the great gifts that spiritual traditions, including Christianity, can give. But we found a way to make it arrogant spirituality. Right. And like, we homegrew it in the United States and we export it around the world, and it's going to kill us all. Which leads to Jeremy's comment. Thanks for the real pick me.
You know, see, Mark, I'm happy about this because, Mark, you started off being very positive about me and my birthday. And, you know, now you've come back around. So that's good.
No, I'm being true to myself. Better. True to myself. There's hope. Like, again, I say this all the time, but I really mean it. Like, 99% deterministic. I don't have a lot of optimism in that 99%, but the 1%, like, the spirit lives in the 1%. There's always a possibility because we don't know how things are going to go.
Wait, you're in favor of the 1%?
This 1%. It's the wealth of heaven.
series.
I want to trade places with Taiwan.
Yeah, I know. Or like New Zealand, they have no COVID. Like everything's fine there. People are doing normal stuff without any problems.
And this is leads to the exceptionalist thing again, because if when people actually believe these stats about other countries, we'll come up with reasons like how the United States is fundamentally different.
Yes. Oh, exactly. we can't do that here.
Right? We're too big. Or we can't do that because we have such a large rural population. Or, oh, we can't do that because we're so diverse, which I hear that one sometimes as a reason. Like, that's a weird one. When people say we can't do that because we're so diverse, what they mean is people of color ruin things for us. That's how I interpret when people say that kind of thing. All kinds of dumb excuses.
Yeah, just really dumb excuses that literally make no sense. But that's the part of delusional thinking, is you say things that literally make no sense.
The Phoenix effect, that somehow America will rise and become great again, but without any change. We see this concept in every election, that one of the two parties will bring about this change. That's right.
Yeah.
Mark writes, and I'm realizing we're past time, developing humility is hard because pride is our original sin. As humans, we really do have this amazing propensity to play God. I mean, some countries are better at humility than others for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's always the issue, right? Is that the individual and collective ego develops pride and self-love, and humility is the antidote, which is what the spiritual life provides. But if you don't engage with that, then the ego process just becomes this runaway freight train. And then, the light at the end of the tunnel is just the train coming in the other direction.
Part of that, I think this layer needs to be added. I think part of the difficulty for a lot of us with humility is because our relationship with our society is one of traumatic abuse a lot of the time, it's hard for people to think about humility as anything other than being lowly and being subjugated. Yeah. Because in our society, we think about being subjugated or subjugators. That's part of the fabric of our society. And so when you talk about humility, people rightfully, maybe because we've used the word humility wrong, think, don't talk that way because I need to be emboldened. And I'm like, humility and boldness are not mutually exclusive. Yeah. Like we need to think about humility in a more holistic, healthy, dynamic, mutual way than I think we often do in this society.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's also that colonial thing, right? They're either the colonizers or the colonized, and the colonized are the humble ones. And it's like, no, that's not it. All right. Ellen gets the last word.
And New Zealand has hobbits.
There you go.
If you go to New Zealand, you'll want to go back because it's very hobbit forming. That's the pun for the day. I guess Mark gets the point. Just to cleanse our palate from that. Mark writes, 12-step programs define humility as the ability to see myself right-sized. And I love that. That is good. And finally, I guess people, you comment at the end. Gus writes, first scene from the otherwise forgettable Newsroom is a great scene about this American delusion. Is Newsroom, was that a television series?
I think it was an HBO series, and it's great. This guy goes on a total rant.
Oh, that's right. It's the Jeff.
Jeff Foxworthy or Jeff. Somebody.
Jeff Bridges. Jeff.
Yeah.
One of those.
Anyway.
Jeff Daniels. Right.
Jeff Daniels. There we go.
Series writes that Taoism is a good framework of humility that is not marred by abuse.
Yes, definitely.
I think Taoism is a very helpful spirituality to get you on. Gus is saying yes, it's Jeff Daniels. With that,
all right,
we're going to close with Jeff Daniels today, and we'll see y'all tomorrow. Hopefully we'll have something more positive to talk about. We'll see.
Count on it. See ya.